Welcome to the ETAP Podcast, a service of the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Each month, we'll provide information and insight into environmental issues important to state transportation officials. Thanks for joining us on AASHTO's ETAP Podcast. I'm your host, Bernie Wagenblast. In 1961, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission was formed to create a strong and strategic planning system in Lehigh and Northampton counties. Today, LVPC continues to provide planning services to municipalities in those counties while working alongside the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. To accomplish this, LVPC coordinates with its communities, community leaders, and businesses, elevating Pennsylvania's transportation and quality of life. All this is accomplished while protecting public health and the environment in all of its 62 municipalities. Additionally, LVPC offers a variety of resources and services. Planning programs including technical assistance, research and publications, mapping through geographic information systems or GIS, ordinances and comprehensive plans, plus more. Joining us to speak on LVPC's work on how it's shaping Pennsylvania's transportation and planning system while protecting the environment is Becky Bradley, LVPC Executive Director. Becky, welcome to AASHTO's ETAP Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
For those who might not be familiar with where the Lehigh Valley is located, you're about 90 miles west of New York City and 65 miles north of Philadelphia. The Lehigh Valley Planning Commission is an MPO, a Metropolitan Planning Organization. Could you give us a bit of an overview, both on the region you serve, as well as what an MPO is and what the LVPC's role is when it comes to transportation and development plays?
We really are the Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton area. So we border New Jersey, and again, just north of Philly, but just southwest of the New York metro. So we touch that. And we've been growing now for about 60 years. So we aren't one of those Rust Belt places, no matter what Billy Joel sang about in the past. And we have had a very strong manufacturing economy since back prior to this even being a nation. And that's only grown, especially over the last 7 years. But really, we're seeing a lot of new people come in. We're seeing a lot of industry come in, but also existing industry grow. So of course, as a metropolitan planning organization, when we're looking at what that means for transportation, how that ties in with our environment, and all of these things that we want to accomplish, whether it's getting people to jobs or to shopping or to housing or to medical services, we have to plan for that. And the infrastructure is the way that we do that. So we look at that very broadly, set forth the policy direction for the Lehigh Valley. And then the beauty of being a metropolitan planning organization is then you can make short, mid, and long-term investments in maintaining and advancing those transportation infrastructure goals.
As an MPO, you've got a lot of partners. I mentioned one in the introduction, Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, but there are many others, the cities, folks who are involved, transit organizations and such. As an MPO, how do you balance the needs of all these different stakeholders that you engage with? And tell me about how those partnerships are a key to your success as well as your operations, if you would, please.
I think one of the beautiful things about the Lehigh Valley is that we actually, as the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, spun off our transit agency about 50 years ago. And so they've always been part of us. Our Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, for example, has always been a partner with us. Because our other kind of little secret, well, I guess it's not so secret now, is that we're also a bi-county planning commission. So we have at least some regulatory authority over stormwater management with new development. And then we provide largely advisory guidance to all 62 local governments on behalf of Lehigh and Northampton counties for development as well. So we get to see a really holistic picture. And so that's a separate board that's 37 members. So it's a combination of elected and appointed citizen members that really help provide that overall framework that then we tie into our transportation planning program through our transportation board, which is Lehigh Valley Transportation Study. So we're always talking to people. There's always been a broad kind of, I would say, ultra Pennsylvania way of looking at things, which is build consensus. And so we have to work hard on that. And that commitment is continual. And that's, I think, really how we get a lot of things done.
You talked about some of the work that you do with stormwater management. I'm curious, does the LVPC have a climate action plan?
do. In fact, we wrote a set of climate and energy goals back in 2013. Interestingly enough, is part of a competitive grant program that our region was successful in getting with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development as the lead. But we're in the process of updating that now. And that's a really exciting thing. Because of the bipartisan infrastructure law now being married through opportunities through the U.S. Department of Environmental Protection, or the EPA, through their carbon pollution reduction program and the funding from Congress through the Inflation Reduction Act. So we're taking our Metropolitan Planning Organization requirements for carbon reduction and then tying them in with a specific focus around carbon pollution reduction with EPA. So we get this really exciting joint opportunity. And in fact, we're working with Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, the New Jersey Department of Transportation, and their environmental agency, along with our Department of Environmental Protection. And we're going to be working on kind of coordinating our priority climate actions. We're going to focus on industrial decarbonization is our first priority, and then kind of update those broader goals after that. So there's so much going on in that sphere. I can't even begin. I could just talk about it for the next 3 hours, but it's it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And many of us across the country have this. Actually, I say all regions, but all states across the country have this new opportunity through these congressional directives to really focus on these critical issues of climate action that we need to focus on right now. So we cannot squander that opportunity. So putting things together, especially as they relate to hazard mitigation and infrastructure vulnerability, and how do we keep people safe and all of us moving and our emergency responders getting to where they need to get to, assessing our vulnerabilities, and then actually investing in making our infrastructure more resilient is just something that I'm not sure we're ever going to get this opportunity again. I hope the opportunity continues, but let's capitalize on it now.
You mentioned that you work with your neighbors across the Delaware River in New Jersey, the Department of Environmental Protection in New Jersey. Are there challenges with working across state lines? And interestingly enough, what separates Pennsylvania from New Jersey is the Delaware River, something that is environmentally sensitive. It's a national recreation area in part. Tell me a little bit about that, how that all plays a role.
It's only an issue for certain politicians, to be honest with you. I haven't met a person either on the New Jersey side of the river or on the Pennsylvania side of the river that works in local, county, or state government who doesn't want to have a clean, safe, and healthy environment or transportation system that's sustainable. And so we really do work across state lines a lot. In fact, we even have working agreements with our neighboring Metropolitan Planning Organization, the New Jersey Transportation Planning Authority, but we've expanded it out even beyond that. And we've joined in as part of a mega regional partnership. And we've created what we've all have called a MAP forum or Metropolitan Area Planning Forum. So that includes like New York Metropolitan Transportation Council and JTPA, which I mentioned. I think we're up to 5 MPOs in Connecticut and then Orange County, New York, plus us. And so we work on everything from issues of freight mobility to how do we work with the state police and other emergency responders when we have weather events to make sure our trucking industry can safely park and get off the roads when they need to. And so there's all of these things that we've been coordinating together. And those state agencies and federal agencies are at the table along with all of us. And so that whole idea that people aren't on the same team, I think, is sort of dead in a lot of ways in how we actually work.
Getting back into the climate action plan, I'm curious, how do you leverage the public rights of way to focus on making climate-aware decisions and developments? How does that all play a role?
So this is my favorite thing right now in the world to talk about. I'm glad you brought that up. So public right-of-way is the largest asset that exists, and I would say probably any region, but it's certainly where we have the vast majority of public land. And a lot of that is not necessarily put to its highest use overall. So of course you have a high use in a road system, let's say, but there's plenty of opportunity in the areas alongside those roads to better manage our stormwater, to protect our bridge infrastructure, our road infrastructure, and other things. And you could do that through natural planting schemes that also helps us with pollination issues that we're having right now, and helping to save everything from the bees to making sure that we're protecting what we have. And it also has the potential, when we start looking at leveraging the assets we already own as a society, it has the potential to reduce costs over time. If you don't need as much hard infrastructure or as large a hard infrastructure, let's say on storm drainage alone, because you're allowing natural system services through appropriate planting schemes to serve that role, then that saves us money that we desperately need to put in other places in the transportation system.
Becky, you gave a presentation fairly recently to the Transportation Research Board, and during that presentation, you discussed one of the actions that the LVPC is taking to contribute to regional electric and alternative fuel deployment. Have you made any progress in the area? And if so, what advice might you give to other MPOs that are looking to do this? Because that is part of what's going on nationally, and state DOTs as well, as they target similar goals.
I think we're all running at it. Like, a lot of planning was done along with DOTs over the last several years on designating alternative fuel corridors. But now with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, we're able to do more, especially utilizing carbon reduction resources. And so I think we're all in the process of figuring out what that means together. And I know Pennsylvania wrapped up their alternative fuels plan, or what we just call the EV plan, though there are other types of fueling involved. with that. And we're using that then because they developed it jointly with all of the metropolitan planning organizations or rural planning organizations. We're now leveraging that to figure out what our local strategy is. So we have started talking with our utilities, talking about where do you have distribution now, and trying to match that up with population and employment centers. Is there a need to increase capacity or substations in certain locations so we can start to figure out what that network is? So now we're at the point where we can get down into the weeds, roll up sleeves and say, all right, here's where we really are going to need that. Because if you don't have the power in those locations, you can't do the distribution to individual charging stations. So it's one of the things that we've really started working on. This is one of the craziest things I've learned in the whole process. On a typical residential transformer that two houses are on, say my husband and I buy two electric vehicles, you know, single family detached houses, let's say 1,800, 2,000 square feet. Our neighbors also buy an electric vehicle. If we have lights and dishwashers and washing machines and dryers running in our house, and we're all trying to charge our cars, we may not have enough juice. And so there are some real important things that we have to think about. It's not just access, putting in charging stations in more public locations, but it's also how do those tie into residential distribution? So it's a very complicated series of things that we're all going to be working on addressing. So I think right now we're at the point where we're learning about those, understanding what the vulnerabilities and the needs are, and then we'll turn that into a strategy as part of our carbon reduction planning.
Tied into that, Becky, one of the things that has been in the news and most recently in places like Georgia and Oregon, but really something that affects every state in the country, is as we have more electric vehicles, that means less money is being collected through the gas tax. So how do you pay for infrastructure and maintaining roadways and things of that sort? As an MPO, is that something that you get involved with at all in terms of looking at alternatives to the gas tax, to how to fund and continue to fund the transportation systems?
Well, I have all sorts of opinions on this. I have so many opinions that our former governor in Pennsylvania put me on the Transportation Revenue Options Commission to look at this issue at the state level. we think about it a lot here, not just me, but our whole region thinks about it, because we do have to have an equitable way to raise funding for our transportation system. And I think we all know there's a lot of different options out there, from mileage-based user fees to things that the, like, let's say Pennsylvania legislature could do, like coming up with a fee if you do own an electric vehicle that would be comparable to a gas tax. But some of those things are short term, some of those things are longer term. But when I was on the Transportation Revenue Options Commission looking at this issue just about a year and a half ago, about this time, maybe 2 years ago now, what became really obvious is if we want to raise the roughly 20% match that we need for those congressionally allocated funds to Pennsylvania, that we have to be doing more. And that is going to require a series of solutions. And I think that's where a lot of states are at. And I think that's where the Metropolitan Planning Organization partners can be an active member of the conversation, because we're allocating these funds, we rely on those state match resources by and large. And in cases like the Lehigh Valley or any metropolitan planning organization in Pennsylvania, we're not allowed to raise funds. We do not have the ability, the legislative authorization to raise match funds. So things like allowing counties of a certain class to be able to raise funds through a series of fees, let's say, is an optional thing to take to the voters to do a voter referendum, is common in other states like Arizona, but we don't have in Pennsylvania. So it's not consistent across the country either. But that's where we can add value, depending on what our individual state needs are, is because we understand what it takes to plan for and then get money out on the street with our DOTs.
One of the challenges a lot of the AASHTO members are facing is building a safe, reliable, and sound transportation system. Tell us from LVPC's perspective what some of your successes have been and some of the plans that you've had to accomplish that.
I think on the safety first, right? I think one of the important things that we've been doing, and beyond the normal stuff we all do, like look at and analyze crash data, is then actually go out and work with those local governments to understand the problem. And this is where I think we have a lot of global success between the U.S. Department of Transportation allocating funds down to the states and then the regions for local technical assistance program. We call it our Dr. Brian program. A gentleman I work with, Brian Height, that's where the name comes from. But it's an on-call service that we offer because of the state, because of the support of the state and USDOT, where people can call and say, hey, we have had 3 pedestrian fatalities here recently. We don't know what's going on. Is it a driver behavior issue? Do we not have crosswalks that are adequate? What can we do? And we'll go out along with an engineer. Brian will go out along with an engineer, and they'll actually walk the site with the local government. And I know it sounds a little small, but the truth is we're then able to leverage whatever resources off of our long range transportation plan and then corresponding transportation alternative set aside dollars that we receive, or when it moves into the short range, our transportation improvement program for funding into making those improvements, helping our local governments write grant applications to the state for multimodal transportation funds or other things. And so you plan up here, but you implement project by project. And so not just focusing on only the interstate highway system, but how that interplays between all modes, because we have to really look at our mode split. We have to look at our functional classification roads and other things. We all know this, but doing that in an equitable way across the whole system is really how you improve safety. It's generally not moving cars faster and ignoring everyone around, or the other users around. And so we've really, really had to refocus, especially as we're growing and becoming more dense and more urbanized, on those interconnections between modes.
Something that has changed in transportation planning in recent years has been states, MPOs, working toward greater equity and justice with their transportation planning programs. What tools have you used to try to ensure that that takes place in the Lehigh Valley?
And we have the benefit in Pennsylvania of being a very consensus-based state. So it's probably a little easier here than maybe other places. But when we merged our land use plan, our bi-county comprehensive plan, in with our long-range transportation plan back in 2019, we did that because we did a first-ever regional equity analysis. And we looked at things like educational attainment, access to a vehicle or within a quarter mile of a fixed route transit option. And so our side network, we looked at all of these things and how that connected to job centers. And what we really realized was the people making the decisions at the table didn't necessarily reflect the people riding the transit buses that Lanta provides, or didn't necessarily represent kids trying to get from their home to a school. And so we had a moment where we were like, yikes, we're not doing this right, and just going out and putting up posters and holding things in conference rooms. So we adopted a build a bigger table philosophy. And what that was is we eliminated steering committees. They're inherently exclusionary. Yes, you have to have a board structure where stuff is approved, but we started then going out into communities. Right now, we're updating our long-range plan. We held 24 meetings throughout the whole Lehigh Valley within 30 days. And what we did is we said, hey, what are your transportation priorities? We went out to the community, were part of events, held meetings at publicly accessible locations throughout different times a day, because that you needed to do that to connect with your audience. And we even got like over 1,000 responses and 1,000 people participating. And sure, that was a lot of time and effort, but it's allowing then our Lehigh Valley Transportation Study to make more informed decisions on what the real needs are and how we can distribute our transportation funds more equitably. So I think that it's something that we are going to need to work on. I'm very grateful that we as a society are recognizing that there are significant issues of inequity on a variety of levels and in a variety of ways. And in as much as we have influence related to transportation planning and investment, we have a moral obligation as well as an ethical obligation to work towards more equity in our communities. I know that's now backed up by the Justice 40 initiative coming out of President Biden's office, but overall, you have to start somewhere. And I think each time we do something, we are going to learn from it. And we always need to work towards improving so we can actually get more voices at the table. We do know where to invest to reverse some of the situation that, quite frankly, we've built ourselves into.
You talked about your public involvement efforts, about getting 1,000 comments on one particular initiative that was put out there. One of the more interesting initiatives that I discovered when I was researching this is that you have something called the Lehigh Valley Government Academy. And one of its roles is to educate citizens on becoming certified citizen planners. Tell me a bit more about the academy and what you're trying to do with that.
A lot of our folks that contribute to local government, so whether that's through their zoning hearing board or their local planning commission, they're volunteers. They're not being paid. There's no qualifications for those jobs, but they're required to work under a series of laws. And so we've developed a whole training program, including those local technical assistance program classes, those bread and butter classes that we do with PennDOT on everything from winter maintenance for our public works crews. But we've now that into the land use component. So we can start to get people educated to think holistically, but also understand what their roles are under the law, and then be able to translate that into the community. But you don't have to be a volunteer for a local government. You don't have to be an employee of a government. They're literally for everyone. And so our community planning class that we host, and we do that actually in partnership with a group of professional planners. We've self-organized into the Pennsylvania Municipal Planning Education Institute. And so we have a standardized program to educate folks. And so we utilize that. But that community planning class that comes out of that group really is to the point where we're having to offer it twice a year. And it's no joke. It's a serious commitment. It's three sessions that are 4 hours each, one a week for 3 weeks. So it's a lot of time after work for folks. And we've gotten so much response that we're offering it again. And so we try to do those things. We work with the DOT on the transportation stuff to develop new training programs, get those out. There's four new training programs that we were able to develop with them and some of our other MPO partners that are coming out this fall as well. And so you just have to stay committed to it and still try to be accessible, try to offer as much for free as possible. If somebody calls you and says, I really want to participate in this, but I can't afford it, let them in. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. And as we wrap up, you talked earlier in our conversation about your relationship with PennDOT. What would you suggest to other state DOTs, things that you've learned from your relationship with PennDOT that might be beneficial to other MPOs, other state DOTs, as they work together?
We have a group of planning partners. So that's every MPO and rural planning organization, RPO, in the state. And we meet with DOT monthly, and they actually help organize our meetings. And I think it's really great because then we have a chance to hear from Federal Highway Administration on new guidance that's coming out or what's available on the docket to what's the state doing about vulnerable users, VRUs. And like, what do we do with those things? And what does that mean, and how can we collaborate? So it's information sharing, it's collaboration. And then also too, a really nice thing that PennDOT does is they actually host at least annually a larger like 2-day session where we develop agenda jointly, and then we can plan together and learn from each other where we all show up. For a while, it was virtual during the pandemic, but it went back in person last year. And that's really beneficial because all the MPOs, RPOs, DOTs, federal officials for Pennsylvania get together and work on issues of transportation. So it's very collaborative. We have financial guidance work group, my favorite one. I'm not sure PennDOT thinks that I'm the favorite attendee, so because I might be a little loud, but it's a really wonderful thing. All kidding aside, it's a really wonderful thing where we develop financial guidance together. So what are we all going to agree to as we put together our 2025 transportation improvement programs? What data are we going to use? How are we going to put together our documents? What's our timeline? What's our deadlines? And so how are we going to distribute the funding? And so that requires all of us to build consensus as well. And so I really just can't say enough about the structure that we have here in Pennsylvania, because it really is a collaboration. And I know it's not that way in every other state, but I think we get really good results as part of that. And we also have buy-in and we respect each other. And I think that's the key to being successful, is that there's true collaboration, which leads to true respect.
We've been talking on this episode of AASHTO's ETAP podcast with Becky Bradley. She is the executive director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Becky, thanks so much for being my guest on AASHTO's ETAP podcast.
Thank you.